welcome to the Clark County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board meeting. It is March 2nd, 2022. And I just want to remind all of our guests and participants here that this meeting is being audio recorded for purposes of uploading to the county website. So welcome, everyone. Glad to see you. And so for our agenda tonight, we don't have a huge agenda, but a couple details to take care of. Is there any community input?
So I have quite a few flyers and different pieces of information that I had forwarded to Trish earlier in the day and that I think are going to be forwarded out to you guys. We have our So You Want a Date training starting and several of our other trainings. We're also doing a monthly housing information training from our housing group. And so I don't know if I gave you guys an update. So our housing committee, we did get 25 vouchers through the Vancouver Housing Authority for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And so, and we've hired our housing coordinator. And so we're doing a variety of housing options right now, and we've started taking intakes. We've got about 6 people in process right now. So that's very exciting. And working on dating and school and, you know, school life, whatever it is anyone wants to do, and help them create the life of their dreams.
And all of the handouts we are posting to our website so that we can just send out one email and say all the handouts are available there. I did also just put the link in the chat.
Thank you, Trish. Is this where we get to do introductions as well?
That'd be great.
Okay. All right. And so if you are all wondering, we have a new face with us this evening. And so it is my pleasure to introduce our new board member, Robert Friedland. He goes by Bob, unless he's being ornery, and then we can call him Robert. and he comes to us actually from the East Coast, but has retired out here for purposes of being closer to his offspring. He comes to us with a background primarily in higher education, correct? And remaining somewhat active still in the digital universe, doing some stuff still, right? So I'm going to let Bob introduce himself to you with more specifics and maybe a little more accuracy.
Well, thank you, Susan. This is a pleasure to be joining everyone. Hello, everyone. I am just thrilled to join you all. Yes, I've been involved for over 30 years in advancing community initiatives, basic research, and educational outreach for individuals with disabilities and their families. For over 2 decades, I was a research scientist and an educator at the New York State Institute for Basic Research that still sits on the original Willowbrook campus on Staten Island in New York. Following my retirement from public service, I found a new excitement as a consulting volunteer at the Associated Catholic Charities of Baltimore in Maryland. This agency serves adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families, and it was a wonderful experience for myself. I then moved to Clark County 3 years ago to be closer to my family, and that's absolutely right. Children are here. They said, what are you waiting for? And we have to say that we are thrilled to be living in such a beautiful place. I truly look forward to learning and listening from all of you, perhaps even in person this upcoming year. Thank you.
Does anybody have any other questions for Bob before we move on? Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. It's nice to actually see you. When we had the opportunity, the recruitment team that did the meetups, his technology was can be difficult. And so we were on the phone. So it's the first time that we've all seen each other. Okay, any other community input before we move on? Hearing none. And so our first item of business is Emily Harris has joined us for two reasons this evening. She's going to give us an update on the family training series and how that is going, as well as begin some recruitment for the October National Disability Employment Awareness Month celebration. Emily.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me tonight. For those of you I'm meeting for the first time, I'm Emily Harris, and I work for an organization called WISE, which is based out of multiple places. Our hub is in Tukwila. We have an office in Spokane, and I'm based out of the Portland office and have a very long-standing history of doing work in my career with Clark County and in Clark County. So I'm so pleased to be with you, and thank you to Trish for inviting me tonight to share about some of the things that I have the good fortune to work on with some of you in this very virtual space. So I'm not very familiar with Teams, and while I was off camera, I was trying to see if I could share my screen so I could share some information. I'm going to attempt to do that same thing live in front of all of you right now, and if it doesn't work, I'll just share the information.
So is this a drum roll?
Okay, let's see what happens. Do you see the PowerPoint?
Mm-hmm.
You do. Excellent. Okay, success. Wonderful. So as Susan mentioned, I am going to be sharing about two different things I am working on with community partners and with Clark County, the Clark team. One of them is the family training series, which we are nearing the end of the 2021-2022 series, and there are two events left. They happen almost monthly. We typically take off the month of December, and we have two events coming up. So one is March 15th, which is on guardianship and the ABLE account, and the Washington Endowment Trust Fund. So we have presenters that are coming to share information about that. It should be a great event, and come join us. We'd love to see you there. I'll make sure in the chat that people have information on how to register and come to the event. The other event that is yet to come is a resource fair, and that's really putting together all of the trainees, highlighting community partners that have been mentioned throughout the series, and also hearing from people who are living and working in their community and in your community, Clark County. And this year, the committee is not spinning our wheels, but we're hard at work thinking about how to make the series and make that resource fair more engaging, because like everything, I heard people talking about how, gosh, it would be so great to be in person, and hopefully someday we all are soon. The series was something that was in person and had a really great opportunity for people to connect, and so this is round two, or year two, of being virtual, and what we've seen is people are still showing up for the virtual training, which is wonderful. On average, I think there's about 50 people at least who register, and because it is virtual, there have been some opportunities to access people who maybe couldn't make it in person. So that's been some of the benefits we've seen. Clark County, and for those of you who heard this information last year, you know that Clark County and the Planning Committee has really put an emphasis on making sure that the information accesses anyone who wants it in the community, and so Clark County is putting funding, time, and effort into making sure that the training series is accessible automatically in English, Spanish, and ASL. And so all of the training is recorded, and so if you couldn't make it to the live virtual training, you can access it later in English, Spanish, and ASL, which has been a benefit to the shift to the virtual series. The second thing on my list, and I'm going to say, because I'm sharing the screen, I can't see if there's any questions. So anyone on the Clark team or anyone on the board, feel free to verbally ask me to stop if there is a question. I'll wait for questions at the end as well. Is there a question?
Nope. Keep going, Emily. You're doing great.
Okay. Thank you, Trish. So the other thing I have the opportunity to share and be a part of is helping with the coordination of Clark County celebration of the National Disability Employment Awareness Month celebration, an awards event, which also historically, for anyone who's been, knows that it's this great community event that has traditionally happened in person, and the last 2 years has shifted to virtual. And it happened in October 2021. It was, I think, very cool. For those of you who are in the virtual space, I think Leanne said you called in. I know there's other people who are on the planning committee. Walt, Susan, Merity, and like I can't see your faces, so I know Mona, who was also on the planning committee. And I think one thing as round two of being virtual that was special was the committee and Angela also. But the other thing that was special was the committee tried to, in a second year of a virtual event, think about ways to, I guess, capture the essence of community and try to get a glimmer of that in-person connectedness that happens with the event. So on the screen, there's a photo of Walt Gordon and Merity Potter and the winner of the Small Business Award, which was Batcave Games. This is Matt, the owner. And so the committee made kind of a celebration awards delivery team that went out and shared kind of in celebration with the business owners, presented the plaque. They had a giant, you know, this big award to share, which I think was really cool. I know that the planning committee really thought about how to be creative to make this event special. So I wanted to share that photo. The community continues to show up, and I think especially in October of last year, in 2021, people were experiencing some burnout with going to virtual events, and it was cool to see that even though people were feeling that, and in other events and other spaces, you're seeing lower registration, 150 people registered, and there were 100 people who attended the live event, and it also lives online, so people can watch it every night before bed if they wanted to. Once again, the committee worked with Michael Ferry to capture stories of people who've been working through the pandemic to celebrate people working in your community. And I'm going to attempt to share audio of one of those videos. Let's see. Trish, will you give me a verbal, like, yes, I can hear it, if you can hear the sound?
Yeah, it's very low, though.
Okay. I'm going to turn it up because it's very low on my computer, so that's good to know. I wanted to share this video, which features your very own, our very own, Trish McConaughey, or Trish Bisher, featured in this, and many other recognizable community members, but this is just one video that was part of the event, so if you didn't get a chance to see it, you'll get a glimmer of kind of the feels. And then I also wanted to note that Ryanette was the community partner and keynote and made an incredible video that brought people to tears and just, it was extra special. So I'll make sure to put those links in the chat. And I should have confirmed too, do we have 2 minutes to watch this video before I'm like, let's get some recruits?
Yeah, I think so. I see Susan nodding.
Yeah. Okay, excellent. Thank you.
We're here today to talk about creating a work culture of inclusion for all.
Let's be honest. Communities that thrive are ones where everyone is included. So let's talk about energizing the work. New customers.
New opportunities.
There's new relationships.
New possibilities. Expectativas altas.
And a huge range of skills.
We spend that time for inclusion.
Paying all people livable wages.
Hiring people intentionally.
So what can you do right now? What can you do right now?
What can you do right now?
What can you do right now?
What moves can you make to create a more inclusive workforce?
Are you an employer that can hire people?
You have influence on creating workspaces that are more accessible.
Are you a family member who can elevate connections and harness beliefs?
Are you a worker who wants to let your talents shine?
What will you do right now?
What will you do tomorrow?
The time was now.
The time was yesterday.
Ready to energize America's workforce and create a culture of inclusion.
Let's stop. And so with that energy carrying us into the 2022 event, what you can do right now is think about if you're interested in being on the planning committee for the event next year. The date is to be determined, but I would love to get, you don't have to say right now, but I'd love for you to think about it and think about the wonderful impact it has on the community and what it could look like next year. And let me know if you want to be a part of this event. Trish, we always say, and this year we're going to start the planning process earlier. And this year, start the planning process earlier. So if you are interested, we'll get a committee planning meeting soon. We'll get the process going. And so what you can do is you can reach out to me at Emily, E-M-I-L-Y, at gowise.org. Are there any questions?
So, Emily, just for our people that have maybe not participated on the planning committee typically, board members, but what kind of things go into that process and like time commitment-ish?
That's a great question. Yeah, and the board members who have participated time and time again, you probably have some insight too. There's a lot of cheerfully naggy emails asking you to do things and energized conversations about what will the event look like. But I know what my time commitment looks like. I'd be curious to hear from Merity or you, Susan, Mona, anyone who's been on it from the board perspective or the committee perspective, how much time you think it might take.
Well, it's from my perspective up until school starts. Yeah, I've been okay. But just the process where we kind of get together and sort of brainstorm, like, what do we want this to look like? What worked well last year? What didn't work well? It's kind of funny, as you were talking, Emily, actually, as you were talking about the family training series, I wrote down this little quote. It says, hybrid is the new normal. And so you talked about how people can access your virtual trainings and you're getting more participation in the family training series. I think a lot of our get-togethers are going to look a lot more commingled in the future, and maybe even, because that's something that we did struggle with in planning this year's October event, was we were going to try to do it in person, so we were going to try to do kind of like encourage groups to get together, and then ultimately we said, no, let's just do it the way we did it before. So there's that whole process. And then the nominations get sent out. And so pretty much the nomination forms are already created. But once they get returned, then the committee goes through the forms and kind of see what rises to the top in all of our different categories, which I think are about 6 categories. Mm-hmm. And so the committee then submits recommendations for the winners. And then, like you said, Mike Perry does a great job of capturing video
of those winners that can be shared during the event, be it hybrid or in person. And then we typically get together for a debrief. And so really as a committee, it seems like we meet about an hour, maybe 5-6 times. And then because it's been virtual, the applications have been sent to us in an encrypted, that's not the right word, but a secure message, so confidentiality is not breached. But it is a lot of fun.
Thanks, Susan, for that, the nuanced pieces of this is what you're signing up for before. Like, sign up. That will give you a better sense.
And I just would want to say also.
Go
ahead, Ted.
That's about right, Susan. The best thing about it was always the debrief at the end because we could go out for something to eat.
And
I this year, I was really busy at work, so I was more involved in the brainstorming part of it, in the meetings, just hashing out ideas of what it could look like, and that was really fun. It's just a really positive, super uplifting, celebratory event, and it is a blast to plan it and put it on. So I would volunteer again. Definitely. I just have some constraints with work hours, but it felt like this last year I could make the majority of the meeting.
Wonderful. I have your name on a list with a star by it, Leanne. I'm so delighted that you'll be part of it again. And if you don't have to decide right now for everyone who's letting
I mean, they can. If anybody wants to let you know right now, they can, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
But you don't have to.
There's no pressure either way. There's
yeah.
We want you to feel welcome and not forced.
Uh-huh. And I will say that, the board's role in the advisory board members' role and the committee's role in all of this really is that, just that advisory. And staff and Emily and her colleagues at WISE do a really great job, I think, of bringing the board's vision to life. And that means that she does most of the work and we staff of the program do some of the work too. And the advisory board brings the vision and ideas about what y'all want to see. You have work to do too, though. So you're not totally off the hook as advisory board members, but that's just kind of to give you an idea about what to expect.
Thanks, Trish and Starla. I see you have a hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Emily. I just wanted to share, I learned this week that several of the videos from last year's event have been used at WSU Pullman in several of their classes. And different video classes and different things. And so I thought that was really exciting because they're still just continuing to share that message as it goes forward. And I love that it has just rolled out across the state.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Darla. And I would say those video stories and the work that Clark is doing around supported employment and customized employment and how those stories are captured is seen in other places in this country and in the world, actually. I mean, just because people can access information in a new way. I know WISE has the Clark playlist and yeah, we get hits from all over. So I know that the videos are being reshared and thank you for sharing a tale of what that can look like.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so just aside, kind of looping back to introducing Bob and being new, are Angela and Kristen, are they both here? Because you might want to know that they're also county staff. There's Angela. Hey, yes.
Yeah, Kristen got to take a vacation this week. So it's just Angela and I tonight. But, yeah.
Yeah. So we have a fantastic staff to work with at the county, too. Yeah, and I am, Emily, more than happy to volunteer. I just am kind of waiting back here, maybe. I don't want to usurp the opportunity from somebody else, typically not every board member is involved, but we sure can. But yeah, makes it fun to be able to get together and brainstorm.
I'll throw my hat in the wind too.
Meredy, I vote that you start lobbying your next door neighbor for the television morning crew to do some promotion of that month.
I'll try again. I was a little disappointed, but if we start now, I will keep bugging him.
Yeah, I was wondering, when is it too early to start? Maybe 6 months in advance to work on him?
You know, I was over at his house and explained what we were doing, and he just, you know, I don't know what it is, but we'll have another conversation. I don't give up that easily.
Especially since inclusion and employment is such a great topic. I don't know. He's like missing it if he doesn't jump at the chance. All right.
This is a real tech.
Cool.
It is. I think that his daughters are both in school and are very bright, and I don't think he quite gets this part. And so what I should do is take one of the films or have him look at that to see what it is and see if that will make a difference. But I won't give up.
Yeah. And so, Chris, I see that in the chat that you asked if we could have a supported employee on the committee, so the planning committee. Tell me a little bit more about what you think that would look like.
On the planning committee, I don't know if that's been something that's happened before, but maybe it's a past award winner or something like that. Just a thought.
Mm-hmm. And Mona, you kind of jumped in with us last year too as part of the planning committee, didn't you? When we were trying to decide like how we were going to do this, it was going to be hybrid and purpose and remote. If I'm remembering correctly. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Mona's having technical issues, so I don't think that she can speak up, but yes, Mona did jump in, and actually there's a provision in the bylaws of the advisory board about subcommittee work and the advisory board kind of appointing anybody that they would like to help if they find a willing candidate. So definitely a possibility.
Okay. The volunteers are rolling in, Monica. Well, I put my email in the chat, and people know where to find me virtually, and I have a list of people. Thank you, Leanne, Susan, Meredy, Ted, and Monica, for your quick volunteering. I will hold you to it and be in touch soon. And Meredy, I don't think it's too early to start planning a flash mob for your neighbor, so that's our first level of operation.
What I think I need to do is to take the video and show him. This guy works for KGW, and I just would think that at this point we need to have something like that on a major station.
Well, Meredy, so I think maybe you and I should talk to our PIO office and maybe, I don't know, the words press kit come to mind, but I don't really know what that means, but maybe there's something that we can pull together, some information to be able to give to him that he can take to whoever he needs to take to. So let's talk.
Yeah. Okay. You got it.
Lindy, hello. I see your very thoughtful comment in the chat. I don't think we've met. So I'm Emily. Nice to see you and meet you. And did you want to add to that or?
Hi, Emily. Yeah, so as a social work student, I'm always very interested in systemic changes, and the month is National Disability Employment Awareness Month, which I believe should encompass more people than just the supported employment users, and a lot of people with disabilities actually don't qualify for supported employment. And so I was wondering if there was any kind of plan to do something a bit more overarching with this year's event that could possibly create more lasting change and work to change the culture of ableism and discrimination that so many of us face in the workplace.
Thank you for sharing that. And I think it's an important comment and thought. And I'm like, I feel like we should carry this conversation on at the planning committee. And we won't solve and answer that right now in terms of what that would look like. But I think, yeah, let's talk about what that looks like. And I see the nods from the people who have volunteered. And Lindy, are you in a space or place? You said you're in grad school. I'm like, do you want to join the committee? Can we recruit you?
Perhaps. I'm very close to graduation. I am just a self-advocate who cares a lot. And, you know, I do also want to say that I appreciate all of the work that you do surrounding the event, and I have attended the event, and it was very well put on last year.
Thanks for the feedback. And, yeah, I think one thing the committee has been talking about is what is the role that the committee can play? What is the role that the event can play in the community, and how can it impact the community to think about who's employed in Clark County and who has access, and amplifying different voices?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I'll put my email in the chat, and I'd love to carry on this conversation, and I'd love to invite you to consider or think about how we can influence this, and I'll put this at our first at our meeting as a point to discuss. So thank you for bringing it up, and thanks for giving some additional point, and lovely to meet you.
Yeah. Well, and just a thought about what you said, Lindsay. So the nominations are sent out to our county kind of listservs, our groups. I know, Darla, you disseminate a lot of them are send out through the employment vendors. And so a way to reach a broader audience with the nominations. And so maybe it's also, you know, post the nominations on the county website and people can link to it and nominate somebody that isn't necessarily in the system.
Every year we do a press release too, and we do have it linked on our website so that people can access that. So it kind of goes out broadly, and then it's just a matter of kind of who kind of picks that up. I think it would be a great thing to consider, you know, how we do that outreach, because, you know, we've done it through our networks, but there might be some more targeted things that we might be able to do to try to get at a broader audience if that's the way the board wants to go.
All right. Sounds good. Any other thoughts on the topic, or are we prepared to move on?
Looks like there's one more comment in the chat from Monica that could also be explained to the contracting agencies, especially DVR-only customers that can be considered.
Yes, true. Yeah, good thought. All right. And so we have, this is March. April, we will be having a work session, and then we won't have a public meeting again until June. And so the conversation we've had
May.
Pretty regularly is around what format we want to use for our meetings. As you may well have all heard, that the mask mandate in schools in Washington is being lifted as of midnight on March 11th. And so they have lifted it for both the schools indoors and on the buses. medical facilities, my understanding, are still required, which the Center for Community Health, am I saying that right, is still considered a medical facility. So if we decided we wanted to try to do an in-person meet, we would still be required to wear a mask. And so how do we feel as a group about our April work session?
Susan, sorry to interrupt. I do have some information that I want to share with the board at whatever point, preferably, you'll probably want to hear it before y'all kind of have your deliberations.
Yeah.
So just let me know.
Do we want to stay status quo or do a blend or try to find some place to get in person? But go ahead, Trish, help inform our decision.
Sure. Yeah. I would love to provide some additional information. So, we're talking about the April work session, but the next public meeting is actually the first Wednesday in May. So that's when our next public meeting would be. So as you all know, the governor has lifted the mask mandate effective March 11th. And that means that no more masks will be required, but will still be required in certain settings like the Center for Community Health. We're considered a medical or a healthcare setting. So we will still have masks required in our building. Places like transportation, the jails, other congregate settings will also still have masks. The instructions that I have received from our prosecuting attorney's office is that our options are a little more limited than I thought they would be, but that's to really, I think, get the most people access to our meetings as possible. So what I have been told is that we will need to either have, we can continue to have a virtual meeting, or we could do a hybrid meeting. And that's, I think that the idea behind that is just so that more people would have access to it. So people that might not be able to make it in person, if there's people, you know, immune compromised or things that are not comfortable with meeting in person and as a group. So, what that means for us is that we would need to access the county counselor's, room for our public meetings, because really that, so this is all if you decide you want to do something more in person, which would mean a hybrid model of in person and virtual. We would need to access or find out if we can access the county council's room. That is really the only place that the county has that is equipped to do a hybrid meeting. Susan and Ted and I crowded, well, not really crowded because we were still trying to distance, but we kind of sat around my laptop one time when we had very short notice of when we needed to provide an in-person option back in July for the July meeting. That is really not going to be an acceptable hybrid way to go forward. So we really need some technology, including microphones, speakers, cameras to be able to keep track of what's going on in the room, as well as internet access to be able to manage the meeting. So we'd have to get the PSC room and see if that's available if the advisor board decides they wanted to go that way. I do want to also let you know, because I know you all have been kind of keeping track of what the county counselors are doing. The county council has not made any indications that I know of yet of what they are going to do, if they're going to go back to doing in-person meetings. The state of emergency is still in effect for the pandemic. So that has not gone away. With that state of emergency comes kind of the relaxed rules around open public meetings. That's why the county council has been able to do their public meetings virtually. That's why our public meetings have been able to be held virtually. So I just wanted to share with you that information. The other thing I wanted to share is that while the state mandate is state mask mandate is being lifted, that, you know, there is the option that local jurisdictions might do their own masking requirements. We don't anticipate that that will be the case in Clark County. So we don't expect our county council or our health officer to recommend continued masking for our local county jurisdiction. So just wanted to kind of give you guys a little bit of that kind of information as you are having these decisions. This is up to you all as the advisory board members to make this decision about how you would like to proceed. That has been made very clear to me that I don't make that decision. It's up to you all what you would like to do going forward.
Any thoughts from any of the board members?
I would greatly appreciate an option to meet in person. So if it's possible to investigate obtaining that county councilor room, I would be one of the people who would, you know, show up in person simply because I joined the council in March of 2020, like right when everything shut down. So aside from meeting Susan and Trish, I've never had an opportunity to sit in a room with a lot of you. And that's, turns out more important than I think most of us, thought it was pre-pandemic. So, if there is indeed an option to meet in person because we can access that county counselor's room for, you know, one evening a month, I would be in support of that and I would show up.
I second that.
Mayor D, it looks like you're having a thought.
I just think it's great to have options, and this virtual stuff is great, but sometimes I think that you also being in person is a good thing, you know.
Leanne, would it make it more feasible for you to attend or are you still at work?
I'm at work for the moment.
Oh.
Yeah. For the moment, I don't have a problem with attending in person. I think some of our meetings should be in person. I think it's really good to be able to see each other, be in the same room with one another, even if we're a little bit apart. I miss it.
Yeah, I agree. I also, I would also prefer to be sharing space with people in physically. My concern is if we move our public meetings downtown and then the restrictions get lifted and then we go back up to uptown, that it'll be confusing for people that regularly attend the meetings that it's like, now where are we meeting? You know, that, I know for a long time we did meet in the counselor's chambers, and then because of the security issue and having to keep the building open later, that we got invited to not use that facility anymore. And so
that's a good way to put it. We got invited to not use that facility anymore. There's not that many meetings left for this year, right? I mean, maybe for this year we could do it, right? And then when we start up again after our hiatus, and I think in August, do we take a hiatus in August? I don't know. But I think in terms of, because I'm an academic too, right? I think in terms of August to May being a year, right? But it's not. But if there's some flexibility in the model, and at some point we would go back to permanently meeting at Clark County Public Health, then you know, that'd be fine. I just think it's the consistency, maybe, if we're going to do public meetings, which may be another issue, Trish, if you approach county management. It's like, well, if we're going to meet in the county boardroom, you know, it would be until this date, and then after which, you know, hopefully we'll be fully endemic by then, we can go back to public health, you know, to start the 2022-2023 school year.
I agree. I like to be in person as well. But thinking about where people, you know, if we start doing this, both of them, people are going to get really confused, I think. Is this a virtual or is this an in-person and virtual? Yeah, I think that that's got to play into it maybe.
Well, and as of right now, I've been instructed that we will always need to offer a virtual option, even if mm-hmm. we get together in person. So, okay. I mean, not always and forever, right? But as of right now, those are my instructions, that I need to have a virtual option, even if most of us decide to meet in person.
I think it does offer people that can't get there another option, but it needs to be consistent so people don't get frustrated.
Another thought, so our immediate decision is about our April meeting, correct? Or not?
Well, Susan, you had floated the idea about possibly canceling the April meeting because of spring break. So I think we wanted to talk to the advisory board about what y'all wanted to do about that one, just whether to have it or not. Now, if it's a work session, we have kind of more options, right? Because those are generally just with the advisory board. We don't have public attending those meetings. That's so you all can kind of learn and plan together. And so, you know, we could go to any number of rooms, in the county, that have, you know, require masks or don't require masks. You know, we have our current room probably still reserved, at the Center for Community Health. We would need to wear masks there. But if we went, we could, you know, go somewhere else where we didn't require masks, and have more flexibility. You know, we wouldn't need all the audio visual, or we could just see if we could just meet at the PSC just because. You did bring up the security issue. So that's going to be, I'll have to check into that too, but you know, I'll look into all, I can look into all of that.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I have another meeting that I need to go to, so I'm going to bail here.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Charity.
Thank you.
Okay. And so, full disclosure, wherever we meet in April, it'll be my spring break, and so I'm not going to be there. So it's kind of up to those of you that plan. That will be the stakeholders in the meeting to decide where you want to meet. And does a decision need to be made tonight, Chris, or can we just continue that conversation by email?
We can continue the conversation via email if the advisory board would like to do that. I can shoot y'all an email just to see how many of you want to, A, have the meeting, and then, B, we can look at options for where to have it. And so far, just in my count, I have, Lori, Ted, Leanne, Susan, and Meredy, kind of open to doing a hybrid meeting where we would have in person. So I think that that's kind of enough. I mean, that would be, wait, 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, that's only half. So if you were to take a vote, you have half of the people, but I don't know that the rest of the board, I mean, y'all should probably have this conversation. If the rest of you would object to the people that want to meet in person can come meet in person, and, the rest of people can tune in online. Is that kind of where we're headed? Or is there concern about that? No, we shouldn't do anything in person. We should just meet online. So yeah. Just kind of throwing that out there.
I know that some people are happier when they get human interaction, so I will support the idea.
I think Darla supports it too. Yeah, because Darla's
not on the board. So, she doesn't get a vote.
Yeah. All right. I think we have, I think just doing an April, do a temperature check on April meeting for our work group via email.
Yeah.
Will be great.
And then I will start working on an in-person option for May then. Is that what I'm hearing from the board? Okay. All right.
Okay, thank you. So moving on, Trish, I know you've got some words left in you.
Yes.
You're going to do an update for the comprehensive plan.
Yes, just a quick update. The comprehensive plan is done. It is live on the website right now. So you can go to the website and see our new updated comprehensive plan. We will be printing some, and then those will be coming to lots of you in the near future in print copy. So that's it. That's all I have.
Okay. And so as we're coming through the wire here, the finish line is in sight. Darla, legislative update, please.
Oh, and the legislative session's coming down to the wire, too. So Monday was the last day for bills to be heard in the opposite house and get into the ways and means and be heard on the floor. So Friday is the last day to consider pass in opposite house by 5 p.m. unless it's necessary to implement the budget. So we'll go through all of those. So right now sitting in rules that needs to be pulled is Senate Bill 5268, and that's our highest priority. That's the one that will provide two additional FTE for caseload forecast counsel. We're trying really hard to get it to where developmental disabilities in Washington State is forecasted. Again, we're the only social service system in the state that's not currently forecasted. And so right now what they're looking at doing is giving us a courtesy forecast, collecting the data, putting the two FTEs on the forecast council so they can collect the data and see whether or not we can move forward to being put on the actual forecast. But it's a process, so we're working on it. As I mentioned earlier, House Bill 1980, and I was just checking while you guys were talking. So 1980 is the bill that would allow for dual services. And so that is the, sorry, Chris, I'm not going in any order, but 1980 is the bill that would allow individuals to have community inclusion and supported employment at the same time. So that actually has been put on place today. It was placed on the second reading consent calendar, which is a good sign. When it's placed on second reading consent, it means they don't expect there to be a lot of controversy around it. So we think that one's going to get passed. Senate Bill 5790 to establish a school to work in all counties per the Transition Collaborative needs to be pulled from rules. House Bill 2008 would remove the IQ score as part of the eligibility requirement for DDA eligibility, and that would need to be pulled from rules by Friday. Senate Bill 581, yes, was there a question? Okay, sorry. Senate Bill 5819, would provide some FTEs for the no-paid services caseload. That would be huge. We lost that. Oh, Chris, how many years ago was it? 5, 8, something like that? Yeah, and it's been huge for families on those no-paid services caseload to not have that case manager. There's a bill to deal with adult family home property tax that needs to be pulled, a bill to establish additional requirements for language access. That's House Bill 1153. That's really important that we go ahead and get that, to establish additional requirements for language access in public schools. That's huge. That needs to be done as well. And Senate Bill 5376 would require public schools to inform families about the Office of the Educational Ombuds, that they are available to them free of charge. So that would be huge. We need to get these things out of rules so we can get them passed off the floor. And then right now there is a budget conference going on where you have the heads So it's the four heads from each side are coming together to deal with the budgets. And right now we've got, I think on the website, Trish put up the side-by-side of the different budgets. The Senate budget actually looks better in some things, but we have several things that we're looking at getting provisos in. So again, that deadline for Friday wouldn't matter because it's going to be necessary to implement the budget. So in proviso, we need funding for Senate Bill 5268. Provisos are in both the Senate and the House to support funding this. Both Caseload Forecast Council and the DDA need funding for the FTEs. And so we want to make sure that goes on. We're asking them to please use the Senate numbers in the proviso because it provides the accurate amount of funding. The other thing that we need is to please ensure that the agreed upon language with the Senate and the governor to reduce the footprint at Rainier School makes it into the final budget. The House budget did not include language to reduce the footprint at Rainier. And for Bob, I don't know if you're aware, but our state still has four institutions for intellectual and developmental disabilities. The one at Rainier is the first one that needs to be shut down for lots of reasons. And so that's what we've really been working on, making those numbers close down. And last I heard, and I haven't looked for a while, but I think there's right about 1,000 individuals scattered throughout the four institutions in Washington State. And then they also want to make sure that we ensure that supported living wage increase is supported at the House level, which actually, and this is for residential, establishes a living wage of $20 an hour for supported living direct support professionals. And while I think that's really important for direct support residential providers, I also think we were not able to get that increase through for our supported employment providers. And it's going to be really critical that we work on that for next year too, because we're losing supported employment providers at the same rate that we're losing supported living providers. And individuals need consistency in their life. And so, you know, David Petoniak always uses that example of how would you like to come home and 50% of the time you have a new spouse, but they say, well, it's okay, you've got coverage, right? Not a good option. So we really are going to need to work on that next year for supported employment. That was pretty quick, down and dirty overview. Questions? No questions?
Darla?
Yes, Ted?
Darla?
Yes.
Why don't you explain to Bob a little bit about what you guys do in terms of going there to not Salem, sorry, I work in Oregon now.
Going to
Olympia, et cetera. Can you just maybe explain to him?
Oh, sure. Thank you, Ted. Well, we have a great job. And one of the things that we get to do is to educate the families and the individuals about what the legislature is doing and how it will impact them, and educate the legislators on what the families are needing. And we get to take individuals and self-advocates up to Olympia every Wednesday when we don't have COVID to meet with their legislators, and advocates from all over the state come together and meet at it together and have a time of bonding and learning and figuring out what's going on and what we need to speak to our legislators about. And then we go up on the hill and meet with legislators in the afternoon. It's an amazing, wonderful time. I'm sorry for the background noise. My husband's on a Zoom call and he needs to shut his door. But now everything's on Zoom. So this morning we had a phenomenal advocacy day,
And we had between 36 and 40 individuals participating from all around the state. And then we're able to meet with our legislators one-on-one, so through Zoom. So that's kind of what we do in a nutshell. PEACE is a small nonprofit here in Southwest Washington. We're expanding. We support families and individuals to help create the life of their dreams. And we do a variety of things to do that. We do not have a drop-down list of many of services. We do have services that we provide, but if somebody needs it, our job is to help figure out how to make that happen, right? So we don't ever say, no, we don't do that. It's like, how can we figure out how to get that to happen?
Okay. And if anybody wants to join those Zooms with the legislators on a Wednesday, would they get the link through you, or can they go to the PEACE website and get it?
Yes, both. But today was the last advocacy day of the session. So, but we will be having our candidates forum in October, yet to be determined whether it's going to be in person or on Zoom. So we'll see how that happens. But that will be interesting as well.
Darla, is it possible for the legislative summaries you send around with the icons? Can we have access to that so we can sort of track those throughout session if we're so motivated?
Absolutely. If you go to the Arc of Washington's website and look under advocacy, there's a link that says bills that you can go to. And I think Trish did update the most current ones on her website today.
All the handouts are available on our website.
Thank you, Barbara.
But I would also encourage you all to sign up to receive the ARC's action alerts. And I'd be happy to send that out to this group, because they have lots of great information about what bills are, what bills they're tracking, what's going on. Darla, would you recommend any other signups or things to be informed about what's going on with the legislature?
Well, for the legislature, no. I mean, I could sign up for the ARC. But I would also be highly aware of the Informing Families Building Trust. That is the best website to gather information for families in the state. And so, really, I mean, that is a collaboration between the DDC and the DDA and families and self-advocates, and it's just a wealth of information, broke down by age. So, and they do put out a regular newsletter, but you can go on their website and get anything you need as well. So, yeah, between the ARCS Action Alerts and the Informing Families Building Trust, you've got a ton of information at your fingertips. And of course, our ongoing newsletter goes out every month with more information than any human being could need.
Thank you, Darla. And so, we've come to the end of our agenda. Which means I have but one more thought, and that is this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for your participation. Have a lovely evening.
Thanks, everybody.
Welcome, Bob.